My name's Rob, as Alyssa said. Thank you all for braving the wind and weather outside. We're going to talk about a fish, a rooster, and a boat today. So happy New Year. Thanks for coming. I'm pretty humbled and excited to get to talk to you guys today on this first Sunday of 2010. Matt asked me to bring something today, either that I was hearing about the church or something that God was showing me or has been showing me lately, and this is more the latter of those two, but hopefully you can take something home from that. So I'm going to tell you what my main point is right now so I don't lose anybody. So you guys ready for my main point? Here it is. The big life-changing choices that we make all the time, where we're going to work, what school we're going to go to, what job we're going to have, a significant other we are going to stay with or not stay with, whatever it is, those big, huge choices don't make us who we are. The choices, those big choices flow out of thousands and thousands of little, tiny, itty-bitty choices that we make every single day. And those little, tiny choices are the choices that bring us to those big decision points. Those little choices that we make hundreds of times a day, many times without even thinking about it, are the choices that make us who we are. Not the huge ones, but the little ones. Over and over and over, the little ones are the ones that make us who we are. And that's what I want to talk about today. Okay? So if you don't take anything else home with you today, take that. So let's see if that's, hey, it worked. Look at that. Last week, Matt talked about light and how light was different from dark. He talked about the light of life, and that's Jesus. He used the metaphor of candles and fire and the importance of the Swedish Covenant Church and light, and there was a picture of a girl with candles on her head. And one thing that he said was light is especially well-suited to darkness. And I thought that was an interesting statement. Because when you light something as small as a candle or a match in a dark space, it makes a huge difference. It gives light that can be seen in the entire space. And even if it's really dark, around a corner, you can tell that there's light around the corner somewhere. John says in the fourth book of the New Testament, the light has come into the darkness, and the darkness has not understood it. And he was talking about Jesus. The light is a capital L light. And I think many times in our lives, certainly in mine, when I choose darkness over light, it's because I'm not understanding fully or putting into practice the things I know about who God is and who Jesus is in my own life. So as we jump into 2010, which is now 3 days old, I have a date on my watch. I'm not looking at what time it is. I want to take an opportunity to try and move us toward thinking about looking at places of light and places of darkness in our own lives and the choices that we make every day to become people of light or people who live a little bit in the darkness or even a lot in the darkness, because that's a choice that you can make every day. So New Year's sometimes brings ideas into your head. The idea of wiping a slate away or starting with a clean slate or an opportunity to start new things. Has anybody ever made a New Year's resolution at some point? Yeah, I have too. So New Year's is kind of an artificially imposed break in our lives. Like in the grand scheme of life, I don't know about you, but like New Year's happened, and the only thing that made New Year's Day was the fact that there were bowl games on. Other than that, my kids still had to eat, and I still had diapers to change, and people still had to, you know, use the restroom and get dressed up to go out in the snow, and like all that stuff didn't change because it was New Year's Day. There were bowl games on, but like the daily things of life were still the daily things of life. So New Year's kind of gives us an artificial horizon, a dividing line between past last year and future New Year this year. So I have a little fun slide here. Is it going to go? No? Let's try it again. New Year's Facebook posts from friends of mine. I don't know if you guys can read those. I'll read them. If yours is up here, sorry. So, just a sample. This is going to be a good year. I can feel it. Last night, whoa. So this was at like 10 in the morning on New Year's Day. Happy New Year's, folks. Here's to 2010, another year to look into the darkness and say, let there be light. That was not my post, and I didn't plan that. I don't believe in New Year's resolutions. I don't like the negative connotation of trying to fix something that's wrong in my life. I strive for New Year's endeavors, new journeys, new challenges to fit in. Citibank screwed me. Other than that, Happy New Year. I don't know what that was about, but it was kind of funny. Another friend of mine said, New Year, same drama. It's a new day, a new year, a new decade. Happiness and merriment to all. Another one, dear 2009, I didn't like you very much. Good riddance. And Happy New Year, everyone. After this past year, I feel like I should put a stone in a creek down the street to remind me that this thus far the Lord has helped us. 1 Samuel 7:12 through 14. That was actually a pastor friend of mine. It wasn't Matt. But I thought that was cool because the creek that's near his house is kind of picturesque and cool. So, okay, so that's Istanbul. So we have lots of different ideas about, which we'll get to in a minute, not yet. We have lots of different ideas about New Year's and kind of wiping the slate clean and starting over. Why do you think we want to do that? Rhetorical question. I would put forth that some of us are coming to terms with some of the things that can motivate us or move us away from things that we wanted to do during the past year, but we ended up doing things that we didn't want to do instead because we got distracted or because we were thinking about this thing that we wanted to do, but then the intricacies of life and the things that we had to take care of every day just kind of moved us away from the thing that we wanted to do. I think another thing that can move us away from the direction we want to go is something like fear. Fear of many things. Fear of failure. Fear that our reputation will take a hit. Fear that something is going to happen to our financial situation or school or I'm going to get a bad grade in this class or whatever it is. All of those fears have one thing in common. They're not Jesus. There's no fear in Jesus. There's no darkness in Jesus. Like John said earlier, the light came into the darkness and the darkness didn't understand it. So we see this opportunity at a new year to make a clean break and start over. And many of us jump at that artificial horizon as a way to make a change in our lives. The thing that you need to know is that Jesus is available for us to make that change all year. And it doesn't have to be a specific point in the calendar or a specific thing that happens. He's always available to take that darkness that we have and bring light into it regardless of when and where. And now I'm going to indulge myself and tell you a personal story. So it could be described as a New Year's resolution, although I didn't at the time. So darkness and light and the increments in which they are in our lives that move us towards one thing that we want to do that's illuminating and blessing us, or towards darkness that kind of binds us and traps us. It goes back to those thousands of little choices that I talked about earlier. So the idea that, you know, you could light a candle every time you made a choice toward light, or you extinguished a candle every time you made a choice toward darkness, the candles add up, or it gets darker and darker and darker, right? So, you know, good or less good. Anyway, here's my story. So, Istanbul. In 2007, my wife and I moved to New Haven from California. Just before we were in California, we were in Istanbul, in Turkey, where we lived from 2003 until 2006. When we came back to the United States, I was kind of heavy. Not emotionally heavy, but physically heavy, heavier than I had ever been in my life. I was 32. I wasn't working out. I wasn't doing anything physical. And living in Istanbul as an American was pretty stressful for me. And despite the old world magnificence there, the place that I frequented the most in Istanbul had golden arches. McDonald's, for those of you keeping score at home. Because a double cheeseburger is a double cheeseburger, no matter where you are. Unless you're in India. And then it's slightly different because they don't eat beef in India, but that's another thing. So I ate a lot of McDonald's and I drank a lot of Pepsi. A lot of Pepsi. And then we came back to the States, which I thought would make everything better, but it didn't, because then it was stressful because I was back in the States and I wasn't overseas anymore. And being gone for 3 years, lots of things had changed. And in the States, I could eat Mexican food. Which you can't eat in Istanbul, because Turks making Mexican food doesn't work. And pizza, and as George Bush would say, American food with American portions. And did I mention that I drank lots of Pepsi? So anyway, all that to say, moving back to the States and then moving to New Haven was pretty stressful. And some really difficult interpersonal things happened during that time, during that move. Some really significant relationships that my wife and I had been counting on to kind of ground us in New Haven and help us be here. Some really hard stuff happened in that. So I ate a lot of McDonald's. I ate a lot of macaroni and cheese with hot dogs. You know, ate a lot of stuff. And in consequence of that, by January of 2007, I weighed about 240, 245 pounds. I couldn't walk up to my third floor apartment without getting out of breath. And couldn't carry my kids up to the third floor apartment. Actually, at that point in time, I only had one kid. But I decided I needed to do something about it. So this goes back to the goal that we were talking about. I decided that I needed, is it gonna go? I needed a big, hairy, audacious goal. A BHAG. Because I am not the kind of person who can wake up in the morning and say, I need to get in shape. I'm going to go outside and run however many miles and lose weight. I can't do that. So I said that I wanted to run 10 marathons before I turned 40, which is a big, hairy, audacious goal. Now, in order to run 10 marathons, you can't just decide to do it. You have to first start running, which I was not doing at the time. So for me, that meant walking. And that first meant walking about a mile. And then it meant walking and jogging. And then it meant jogging and walking. And then just jogging, and then finally, about 4 months later, I actually started running. I started running for like 2 minutes at a time, and by May, I had gotten to the point where I could run for about a half an hour without stopping. Anyway, I continued doing that, and by October of 07, I ran a marathon. Yay! Come on, go. There we go. I ran the Hartford Marathon, and as you can see on the bottom, I finished 1,714th out of about 1,900 people. Thank you. Needless to say, I was not in contention for the win. Okay, but I ran a marathon. One down, nine to go. So a string of decisions that started in January culminated with me finishing a marathon in 5 hours and 12 minutes in Hartford in October. Lots of little candles that created light that got me to a point where I could run for 5 hours mostly without stopping and finish something. So what does this have to do with light and darkness and choosing life? Well, every time I chose to run, I was in a small way choosing light in my life. It was better for me physically to run. I got to the point where I prayed and sang while I was running. Sometimes I cried while I was running, not because I was running, but because I was actually processing through things and God was kind of healing me in some ways of things that had happened. Sometimes I didn't think about anything other than right foot, left foot, right foot, left foot. But sometimes I would come back home and I would say, hey, Asha, that's my wife, by the way, I figured something out while I was running. And then I would, you know, bloody bleedy blah, I would tell her whatever I figured out. So that choice and continuing choices has resulted 2 years later, almost exactly, because it's January of 10 now. I've lost 45 pounds since then. I'm healthier. Just 2 days ago, we were in New Hampshire for New Year's, and my daughter and Elena Hartley were on a sled, and I was pulling the sled through the snow with B going, faster, Daddy, faster. And I was like, dude, I'm running in like calf deep snow. I can't go any faster than this. But 2 years ago, I wouldn't have been able to do that. So that's pretty cool. Since then, I've run another marathon, and it was smaller than Hartford. So instead of finishing 1,714th out of 1,900, I finished like 780 out of like 812 or 810 or something like that. So the percentage was probably about the same. but I'm making choices and I'm moving on. I've also changed the way I eat. I eat smaller portions. I eat fewer desserts. I still drink a lot of Pepsi, though. I'm working on that. Times of stress, lots of work, Pepsi's the go-to thing. So I'm still working on it. So every time I have a choice to make about what I eat multiple times a day, every time I have a choice about what I want to drink more times a day than what I eat, I have a choice between good choices and bad choices, darkness for me or light for me. The more you choose one thing, the easier it is, and you want to make that choice again. So now I want to read you something that I hope I can tie into this and hope that the point comes together. So I have a history of running. I have a history of choosing light. There's still been a lot of days when I've woken up at 5 in the morning and looked outside and gone, holy cow, it's really cold and dark outside. I don't want to get out of bed and run today. And some days I roll over and I go back to sleep. But some days I get up and I keep running. The second marathon I ran was actually slower than that marathon, and it actually hurt more, because if you miss training and you have a race, it shows. You make choices to prepare. Did you make choices to prepare the way you needed to prepare? Did you choose the good, the light, the running enough times? If you didn't, it can hurt. There's consequences for our choices. So the difference between choosing the good and the life and working towards something like a marathon and choosing the good and the life and having that something be Jesus is that Jesus will take you at any point. He'll take you wherever you are, in whatever place you're in, no matter how dark that place may be. So here's the story. Maybe. There we go. Okay. So in Mark 14, Peter, who's one of Jesus' disciples, this is the night that Jesus was arrested. Jesus was in, you know, Pontius Pilate's palace being interrogated and questioned. Peter, in the garden when Jesus had been arrested, just to refresh your memory, had chopped off the ear of a Roman soldier. And Jesus, in one version of the story, picked up the ear and put it back on the guy's head, and then they could proceed to arrest him, and they went. So Peter followed Jesus, and this is what happened. So while all this was going on, Peter was down in the courtyard. One of the chief priest's servant girls came in and said, seeing Peter warming himself, looked hard at him and said, "You are with the Nazarene Jesus." This is the Message, by the way, if you're wondering what translation it is. Peter denied it. "I don't know what you're talking about." He went out on the porch, and a rooster crowed. The girl spotted him again and began telling the people standing around, "He's one of them." He denied it again. After a little while, the bystanders brought it up again. You've got to be one of them. You've got Galilean written all over you. Now, Peter got really nervous and swore, I've never laid eyes on this man you're talking about. Just then, the rooster crowed a second time. Peter remembered how Jesus had said, before the rooster crows twice, you'll deny me three times. And he collapsed in tears. So, we know Peter, according to at least one of the gospel accounts, was the first disciple that Jesus called. He'd been with Jesus for 3 years, day in and day out. He'd been choosing a lot of light, a lot of life. He'd been drinking it in and processing Jesus and living with him every day. Now, Jesus' ministry was mostly in Judea and Samaria in Israel, right? Well, I looked at a map. And if I was more technologically savvy, I would have a map right here, and you could look at it. But Peter would never have been, in his entire time with Jesus, more than about 120 miles away from his house, at the absolute most. The distance from Galilee in the north part of Israel to Jerusalem is about 110 miles. So at any point in that 3 years, Peter could have said, I'm good, I'm going home, I'm going to go catch some fish. I'm done with this. But he chose to stay. And he chose light and life over fish every day. And then, on this night when Jesus had told them he was going to die, he had another choice. So they were living in a police state at this point in time. The Romans were occupying Palestine. Order and law and all that kind of stuff all came down from Rome. So the police state and, you know, the rulers and essentially the cops came and, on orders from the chief priest, came and arrested Jesus, right? And Peter followed to see if he could do anything after he chopped off the guy's ear to help Jesus. So as he was waiting by the fire that we read about, he was presented with a choice, actually three choices. And he made the wrong one all three times. Why did he do that? Why did he choose what he chose? Why did he say what he said? What was going through his head? Fear? Self-preservation? Was he worried about getting caught? Was he going through the different motivations that we talked about for kind of changing our lives and making resolutions above? Was fear involved? Probably. The guy whose ear he had chopped off was a Roman soldier. There's a good chance that if someone had realized he was the guy that chopped his ear off, he could have been arrested himself and probably flogged at the very minimum and at the maximum, maybe killed. We know from lots of other stories that Peter didn't always think before he acted. And he didn't always think before he opened his mouth. So maybe when she asked him the first time, were you with Jesus? He just went, no. And then later, he was like, oh man, I said no the first time. Do I backtrack now or do I just try and keep up this charade? And he just got in deeper and deeper. How many of us have ever said something we didn't mean? Anybody that's married? Have you ever said anything that you didn't mean at the beginning of a fight and then continued to fight about it, knowing that you said something you didn't mean at the beginning of the fight, and you, Ty's just shaking his head, no. Yeah, so maybe Peter just got stuck. And then as he realizes what happens, he gets to the end and he hears the rooster crow and he breaks down into tears. Did Peter set out to go to the courtyard and deny Jesus? I don't think so. I think he was there to see if he could do anything for his friend and for this man who he had said not that long ago, you must be the Son of God. Maybe he was thinking back to this time. Here's another story we've probably heard. So Matthew 14, as soon as the meal was finished, Jesus insisted that the disciples get in the boat and go on ahead to the other side while he dismissed the people. With the crowd dispersed, he climbed the mountain so that he could be alone and pray. Jesus stayed there alone late into the night. Meanwhile, the boat was far out to sea when the wind came up and they were battered by the waves. And at 4 o'clock in the morning, which is either really late or really early, depending on your perspective, Jesus came toward them walking on the water. They were scared out of their wits. "A ghost," they said, crying out in terror. But Jesus was quick to comfort them. "Courage, courage, it's me. Don't be afraid." Peter, suddenly bold, a second ago he was terrified. "Master, if it's really you, call me to come out to you on the water." Oop, one too many, there we go. He, being Jesus, said, "Come on." Jumping out of the boat, Peter walked on the water to Jesus. But when he looked down at the waves churning beneath his feet, he lost his nerve and started to sink. He cried, "Master, save me!" Jesus didn't hesitate. He reached down, grabbed his hand, and then said, "Faint heart, what got into you?" It's an interesting translation. The two of them climbed into the boat, and the wind died down, and the disciples in the boat, having watched this whole thing, worshiped Jesus, saying, "This is it. You have to be. You're God's son for sure." Was Peter thinking about that in the courtyard, maybe? Maybe he was thinking about all the people that he had seen Jesus heal. Maybe he was thinking about how he felt guilty that he kept falling asleep in the garden that night while Jesus was praying, when Jesus had specifically said, "Stay awake and pray for me." And Peter kept nodding off. We don't know. But we know, based on lots of other stories, that Peter had faith. He jumped out of the boat to walk on the water because Jesus invited him to. We know he healed people. We know he casted out demons when Jesus sent out the 70, and Peter was one of the people he sent out. Peter saw Jesus do crazy things. He experienced things. He did things himself. So we know that Peter had a series of choices. He'd been choosing light and been choosing life. But then he made some bad choices. Peter, being an Israelite then, probably knew this as well. This is Deuteronomy 30, 14 through 18. This is part of Moses' speech right before the Israelites go into the promised land, and God has told Moses, "There's blood on your hands. You will not go into the promised land. You can see it, but you can't go." One of the things that Moses said in that speech was, "The word is here and now, as near as the tongue in your mouth and as near as the heart in your chest. Just do it. Look at what I've done for you today. I've placed in front of you life and good, or death and evil. I call on heaven and earth to witness against you today. I place before you life and death, blessing and curse. Choose life so that you and your children will live and love God, your God, listening obediently to him, firmly embracing him. Oh yes, he is life itself." Peter knew that he had life in front of him, and he had made a choice over and over and over to follow and obey Jesus. Follow and obey over and over. Life and good. Life and good. Jesus is life and good. The thing about Peter's failure here is it shows us what happens to us, or what can happen to us, if we fail to make the right choice. If we fail to choose Jesus. We're told in John 21, right here, what happens when Jesus catches up to Peter after he has been crucified and raised from the dead. He catches up with Peter, and what has Peter done? Peter has gone back to Galilee and is fishing again because he thought it was over, thought it was done. Jesus died, that's it. So in John 21, verse 15, it says, "When they had finished eating," so just to recap the story right before this, this is when they're out in the boat and Jesus shows up on shore and they'd been fishing all night and hadn't caught anything. And Jesus said, "Hey, throw the net on the other side of the boat." And they went, "Okay." Threw it on the other side of the boat. And then they couldn't pull the net in because there were so many fish. Who knew? Just like 8 feet on the other side, there was all these fish. So they brought the fish in and cooked it over the fire. When they had finished eating, Jesus said to Simon Peter, "Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these?" "Yes, Lord," he said. "You know that I love you. Feed my lambs." Again, Jesus said, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" And he answered, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you. Feed my sheep." The third time he said, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" Now Peter was hurt because Jesus asked him the third time, "Do you love me?" And he said, "Lord, you know all things. You know that I love you." And Jesus said, "Feed my sheep." So choosing life, choosing to listen and obey, choosing life and good is choosing life. Choosing that light, bringing it into a dark place. So Peter made these choices, and then Jesus died, and then the disciples huddled in a room for a while, and then they left Jerusalem and went home. And Peter had to be in a really dark place because his last kind of memory of interaction was this time in the courtyard. So if you haven't been choosing life, if you haven't been choosing light like Peter didn't in the courtyard, don't be afraid of what the light will show. Jesus isn't afraid of what's in the darkness. You can make a resolution that's a small decision. You can make a resolution that's a big decision. Making a decision for Jesus is a huge decision, but it's easily accomplished. You just turn to Jesus and ask for some light. He'll give it to you. And like Matt said last week, light is perfectly suited to darkness. You'll find that if there is light, the darkness recedes. Now, before we go on anymore, let me say this. I'm not saying that if you choose light and life, everything will magically fade into glowing light and peace. That's not what I'm saying. All of the past decisions that you've made, all of those thousands and thousands of little tiny decisions add up to things, and they affect what's going on in the present. Your past decisions have consequences. Choosing not to study could affect your ability to get into grad school. Choosing to smoke could give you cancer. Choosing to spend money without regard for your financial status could get you in debt. Making bad decisions has consequences in your life. Choosing Jesus can bring perspective and light and life onto those consequences and into those situations, but it doesn't make those consequences go away. Okay, with that being said, sometimes when we step into light, light shows us things that we don't want to see, that we don't want other people to see. But in choosing light and in choosing life, you're choosing life and good. Life and good is choosing light. And choosing to bring light into a dark place in your life where you haven't been choosing light, or maybe for the first time ever, you're choosing to bring light into a dark place. Don't be afraid of what the light will show. Jesus isn't afraid of what the light will show. If you're going to fear something, don't fear what the light will show. Fear hiding it. Fear something that is eternal and good, the good kind of fear, the fear of God. Fear something that comes with grace and unconditional love instead of darkness. The light and life that brings freedom from darkness and death. So we who have chosen Jesus at some point in our lives have chosen freedom. And we can always, no matter where we are, make that choice to come back to freedom. If you've not yet made that choice, that's a choice you can make really easily. Choosing light is something that can happen in any dark place. A match or a candle can be lit at any point, no matter how dark your dark seems to be.